This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. I want to let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by Gold and Coin Connection. And they're located at 2568 South Church Street, and that's beside Gateway Tire Center in the strip mall. And they are owned by Pastor Larry Dunn, ERO Ministry, partners Chris Chico and Wayne Eberly. And they buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. And they have vintage sports collectibles and even some great antiques. And as everybody knows, we're just about out of shopping days for Christmas. But if you want to lay away, you still can if you go over there as soon as possible. Because for a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles, take them by and let Pastor Larry Dunn take a look at them and his partners also. The Golden Coin Connection at 2568 South Church Street, or give them a call at 890-2646. You know, of course, I've got Larry Stewart on today, and one of my favorite people in the whole wide world.
Thank you, Larry,
we're getting kind of older. I had to go with Tommy John yesterday. I called Judy Frost and told her I banged my foot up again, and Tommy went in, took a look at me, and kind of shook his head a little bit, and you know how dumb I am sometimes. So, and then I went over to Murphy's where I got, they fitted me for some new orthotics for my feet because I'm banging them and I've got very little left. In some ways it's not too bad to get old, in some ways it's not too good to get old.
Well, the only good thing about getting old is getting that little red, white, and blue Medicare card.
Yeah.
The rest of it is all downhill, but you know, we're getting close to the worn out stage.
Speaking of that, I ran into Jerry Gaither today.
Good guy. Great guy.
At the City Cafe, and he said for me to send you his love. And that you were one of his favorite people when he was a superintendent. And he was telling me about the time that you guys went over and inspected the ground and where the new Las Casas school was being built.
Well, yeah, we did that. And then we went over one day to check on the tearing down of the old school.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy on the bulldozer jumped off and was just reaming us out pretty good because people had been up there trying to get bricks. And I understand that.
Yeah, and you two look kind of seedy.
Yeah, we did, especially Mr. Gaither.
Right.
So I had to tell him who Mr. Gaither was, and then after that, he found out who he was, and he got real humble, and he let me drive the bulldozer a little bit, and I helped tear down the old auditorium there.
Did you charge him?
No, I didn't. I didn't because I wasn't a union man. See, you had to be a union man.
Well, you weren't a union man. But you were a top educator, and you're one of those people that really pushed and stood up for your community. And, you know, that's the thing that's always amazed me is once you become head of a school, as a principal of a school, you automatically become a major part of that community.
Well, you should.
You should.
And that's what I tried to do. I hated to move from that old school as much as anybody because outside of Linda Brown, I guess I'd spent more time there than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted better for the kids at Las Casas, and it was a lot better when we moved to the new school, but it was a lot different. I told her, we walked across, we moved everything ourselves, and the day that we opened up February the 1st in 1993, we had the kids to get their books, and we walked across there. And I told Lee and Knight, my secretary for 29 years, I said, Miss Elliott's going to be different over here. She said, oh, no, it's the same kids. I said, it'll be different.
Mm-hmm.
And then in about a year, they rezoned and everything. We went from 350 kids to about 800.
Mm.
And they had to build on, you know, and we tried to tell them, us, me and Donnie Johnson at Rockvale and Joe Herbert at Kittrell, that you're not building these schools big enough. And but they thought they were, so they had to tear up more coming in to add on to the new school than it would have cost them to build it, probably, if they'd gone ahead and done it. But anyway, that's you need to be part of the community, and that's what I would tell the new principals. You know, get involved. You know, get involved with the volunteer fire department. They'll help you out more than anything. They moved us.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't call maintenance or anybody. The volunteer fire department moved us.
Las Casas has always been a real close-knit community, but when you went from 300 and something to 800 and something, how did you see that affect your relationship with the kids in the classrooms?
Well, it didn't affect my relationship any because I still knew all of them.
Right.
I knew their name because I had had most of them's mom and daddy and some of them's grandmamas and granddaddies. But I just didn't have as much time to mingle with them like I did over to old school. And, you know, you have different, you know, people. They got the zoning kids from different areas of the county, and we got closer to town, and it was a different population. And it took a while for them to change. Now, some of them thought they could change us, but that wasn't going to happen. And the kids, the Las Casas kids, wasn't going to change. And so to fit in, the kids that zoned there, they had to change. And after they did, they was just tickled to death to be there. And we got along fine.
I always figured that you would settle somewhere right in the middle of Las Casas community. And you're actually closer to Kittrell than you are Las Casas.
Right. Well, and at the time, I wanted to.
Yeah.
But I couldn't afford it. The
yeah, that is high property, or it used to be,
yeah,
anyway.
It is. And I could have bought some houses. I was telling my grandson sitting over here about some places I could have bought, you know, for a little of nothing. But back then, it was a lot of money. And, you know, you could, wasn't no trouble borrowing money, but we had trouble paying it back a lot of times. But, yeah, I would love to have lived at Las Casas, but, you know, I didn't.
You brought in an interesting magazine this morning, the Murfreesboro Magazine, and I gave it to Brian. He's run off with it, but it had some really unique pictures, and Madge Lewis is the one that did the article, and everybody that's out there listening, pick up your magazine, if you take the paper, and read that article, but because it's one of the more enlightening articles on Murfreesboro sports back in the early 1950s, when a lot of people think that some of the best teams that Central High School ever had were during that period.
Oh, it were. Well, of course, you're talking about Coach Lee Pate.
Right.
One of the greatest guys that I ever met. Mm-hmm. Now, he was hard to get to know. But and there's a picture of Homer Pittard in there. There's a picture of Bob Burkett in there.
Great pictures.
And, right. And then you got the athletes like Earl Roberts, Brock Sanders, and, you know, so Harvey. Some of those.
And my Uncle Ben.
Ben Jones. And but they were great teams. And some, and Madge Lewis did a great job. Mm-hmm. You know, and she's also one of my favorite people. And
her
husband, I suspect her husband raised half the kids in Murfreesboro that's between the age of 20 and 50. And Dr. Jim Garrison raised the other half. I know he raised my two. I remember Dr. Lewis, I asked him one time, I said, when do they have to quit coming to you as a doctor? He said, when they get embarrassed. And my son, when he quit going is when he moved to Atlanta to start the college. And we'd go over there, and he said, oh, I like Dr. Lewis. I want to keep coming. I said, that's fine. But it's a great article about a great guy, and I had the pleasure of knowing Mr. Pate, and I'm glad I did.
I did too, and he shaped me as far as what my future is going to be by just dealing with him. And I've always heard coaches say that when you're going to get a real lesson on what life is going to be about, go into some type of sports, because how you're able to succeed in that sport and how much effort you put into it and how you listen to your coaches will mean a great deal to you for the future.
Well, I think coaches mold more people.
Oh, I do too.
I know Mr. Pate commanded respect, and I mean, I never had him as a coach or a teacher, but when he was coaching at Central and we would play, I'd sit with him at the old district tournament at the old alumni gym, you know, and he told me one time, he said, son, you don't never get better unless you play somebody better. And I wanted to say, well, how would you know? Because you don't play anybody better because there is nobody. But I didn't. But he was right, and you know, I played him, and knowing all the time we was going to get drilled. But you would learn something if you'd sit and watch him. And if you could discipline your kids half as good as he could, you'd be all right.
You know, coaches are put up on a pedestal after they've been at a certain school for any length of time and have been successful like you were, and Mr. Pate, and all the people that you dealt with, and the kids who played for you. You know, there is such a strong following, and I know you, and I know what you've done. I know a lot of your ex-students still get in contact with you, and when they see you, they make an effort to go over and express their thanks for all the things that you've done.
They do,
for them.
And I appreciate that, Truman. And you know, I was my grandson and I went off to college bookstore before we came up here, and the lady's checking me out said, "Didn't you used to coach at Las Casas or be principal one?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, I went to school at Walter Hill." I said, "Well, I guess there went my discount." She said, "No." She said, "I always thought you and Mr. Roger Brewington were two of the greatest guys." I said, "Well, to be compared to Roger Brewington is about as good a compliment as I could ever get, because he was a great guy. And so was Lee Pate, so was J.J. McWilliams, Joe Shelton at Eagleville, Jerry Gaither. You know, we're talking... You know, people. A lot of people don't know who we're talking about.
Oh, I know.
They're great, great guys.
But their institutions, when it comes to their part of the community, and just like what you've done, and sports in general, and one of your favorite friends in the whole wide world in your lifetime is L.D. Agee.
Oh, yeah.
I know that.
No doubt.
And, you know, he is a lot the same way. He did so much for the kids and the community. And a lot of this is done strictly through sports. But they're the type of people that the young people were and taking care of them, that was their basic goal
it
in
was.
Life.
And L.D. enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd say his favorite saying was, "Pay me when you can." Mm-hmm. And if you couldn't, then that was okay. And a lot of people, I mean, he died, a lot of people owing him, you know, money, and he didn't care. He didn't care. He was in it. He was in it for the kids, and he was not in it for LDAG. He was in it for the kids. And anybody that went through the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s playing sports in this town and say that LDAG didn't help them is a liar. That's all I got to say. He's a liar.
You loved your kids. And I'm talking about the students that were underneath you. But you were tough with them. And knowing you, there were probably a number that you had to spank while they were underneath your responsibility.
I'm sure there was a few.
And I had Butch Vaughn on yesterday. We were basically talking about what has happened to the school system since prayer was taken out of school. And since discipline has been taken out of the school, and you've seen it firsthand also, can you kind of give me a feeling of some of the changes that occurred during that period and afterwards?
Well, there's been a lot of changes, and there's been a lot of changes since I retired in 2000.
Right.
And a lot of that is discipline. I don't know why it changed when I retired. The kids still knew how to behave, and they did. And if they didn't, they were punished. And I never had a problem with the parents at Las Casas because they wanted their kids to behave. Now, you don't have any problems out of those kids.
Right.
It's the ones that come and say, now my kid has never misbehaved. Mm. Well, I don't believe that. And I would tell them they don't misbehave at school first. But, you know, Butch Vaughn and I and a bunch of us old people, back in those, I mean, you got to get a kid's attention before you can teach him anything.
Right.
And, you know, we didn't have any hoodlums in these county schools. I mean, we had some that were mischievous, but we didn't have any hoodlums. But you know, you're talking about prayer in school. I remember when Lamar Alexander was governor, it was required to have a moment of silence every morning. Now, sometime between then and now, I don't think the Constitution has been changed any. And so I think the problem is people interpret things wrong. I heard Greg Tucker on your show, and he said, you know, you can still have prayer in school. You just can't make people pray the way you want them to.
Right.
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody ever tried to get people to pray a different way. I mean, but... You know, this like the old saying, you know, when you take the prayer out of school and you put the guns in and, you know, stuff like that. So that's
a lot of times they're just afraid. I mean, you're right. Once something like that happens, like the ACLU, and they make threats toward any type of government or whatever, people just start jumping through hoops. And I never have understood that. Cause, of course, part of it is they don't want to have to pay to go through court, which
That's right.
To me is kind of intimidating for the government.
New principals start, and they would call some of us old people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would tell them, you know, you do anything you've got guts enough to do. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody questions you, you're better off if you're right. But you can do anything you got guts enough to do. And I did some things that was probably against the Rutherford County Board of Education policies. If my kids needed it, and I knew they needed it, then I did it. And, you know, I never did. I never was sued. Of course, if anybody sued me, all they got was house payments and car payments. So they didn't want
join
any of
the
that.
Club.
Yeah. So, but anyway, this, I mean, we've got off, you know, way out in left field on a lot of things, a lot of things.
Now, when you would have to spank a kid, would you call the parents before or after you had to discipline the child? Because I remember when I had to go through that, I hated going home.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know whatever the principal did to me or the teacher, I was going to get worse when I got home.
Well, to answer your question, I didn't call them every time. Because most of the time the kids would say, don't call my daddy. Mm-hmm. Because, like you said, you'd get a lot worse when you got home. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if the kid was big enough to misbehave, he was big enough to take his punishment. And, you know, we never did punish one that was just, you know, unreal. You know, I've scared the death out of some kindergarten kids because, you know, if you're standing up and the kid's sitting down and you're 6'4" like I am, you're pretty intimidated.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you didn't have to strike them to strike fear in them. And, I get a kid, they tell me, I don't remember this, that I was bad about taking my index finger and punching on them when I talked to them. And I think somebody made that up. My son probably started that. But that was usually about all it took. But we did have to spank some, and we had to suspend some from school when we had high school. But mm-hmm. I always figured those kids that come to school and misbehave don't want to be there anyway. So that's like, you know, throwing a rabbit in the briar patch, you know. Don't suspend them. That's what they want, you know. But so I didn't suspend many.
You know, kids are just, I mean, they're like us. Once they get used to something, it just pretty much is the way things are going to be. And I never will forget when we started the SRO program, we put the biggest, toughest guys in the high schools so that they could be seen and the kids would know they were there. And they were there to talk and gain the respect of the kids. And I never will forget at Oakland, Bill Kennedy was put over there. And, of course, you know, he's a big, strong guy. And one of the first days that he was there, two of the biggest students, athletes, got into a fight in the hallway. And, of course, there were hundreds of kids just, they want to see the fight.
Oh, yeah.
So he wades through, grabs both of them, pushes them apart, and says, now, guys, you don't do this in our school. So I want you to, and before he could get through his sentence, one of them threw a punch at the other guy and just barely missed Bill. And when he did that, Bill grabbed him in the chest and throat area and lifted him literally off the ground with one hand. And you could hear silence. It was just like something has changed here mm-hmm. in our school
mm-hmm.
and we don't know what to deal with this.
Yeah.
But he became friends of all the kids, and even the kids that were troubled kids. He would try to work with them and get them to change their attitude about what is supposed to be in school.
Well,
and you guys used to do that before it ever got to that stage.
Well, we were SROs a long time
before
we had
SROs. Yes, you were.
And, you know, you could do whatever was necessary to control an unruly child. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, and a lot of times that required, you know, grabbing them and holding them, you mm-hmm. know. The SROs is, I mean, that's the best thing that's ever happened. Since I've been in education, that's the best thing that's happened. But, you know, and Bill Kennedy and Jim Trammell and all of those guys, I mean, they were good at what they did and still are. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bubba Howell, oh, my gosh. How many kids at Rockvale looked up to Bubba Howell? Every one of them, I'd say.
It was the most emotional funeral I've ever been to.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
And I'll guarantee you every kid from that school was there,
yes.
And they were all very emotional that day.
And Bubba was a good guy, and he was a friend to everybody. And the kids, you know, that are in school, they want somebody like that because mm-hmm. they don't like to be bullied around.
No.
You know, and you just can't have it. Now, they have classes about all this, teaching them how not to bully, but the best thing is have somebody like Bill Kennedy or Jim Trammell walking up and down the hall. I mean, that's money well spent.
Well, we knew it had to be done, but in retrospect, you look back, and then the changing of the rules on how teachers and principals were having to deal with kids, that was a lot of the problem that began the erosion of respect in the school system.
I agree.
Because you know it's better than anybody else. When you give a kid discipline with love, you're making a positive impact on that kid's life.
Yeah. It's changed. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not changed for the better. But, you know, the SROs are great. And, you know, we're going to have a change of the guard in Rutherford County. And I don't know who it's going to be. But surely to God, they'll realize that that's a great program and keep funding whatever they have to do. I mean, I think we'll have an uprising if somebody comes in here and says, first thing we're going to do is do away with the SRO program. And I'll be the first one in line, I'll tell you that.
Well, say if you were 35 years old again and you were just getting started as a principal in Las Casas again, and the new rules of testing and everything were going to be part of the equation, how do you adjust to that?
I'd probably go down to Nissan and see if they were hiring.
I think that's what we're having right now.
I think we are, too. I know we are.
Yeah.
You know, I never did get real, you know, beat up about testing. I never did stay on my teachers about it. You know, I'd tell them, you know, we'd talk about it, and the test scores come back, and we'd talk about them. And we always had good test scores.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are some people making the rules for education that don't know anything about education. And I mean, Joe Carr will tell you this, that he voted to pass the new evaluation process and didn't know what it was. And then when he went and stopped by Las Casas one day, Lyndall Duke told him, and he said, my God, man, that's stupid. So now he's trying to get it changed. And that's the mark of a good representative, you know. Admit I made a mistake and then mm-hmm. try to do something about it. Don't just try to cover it up. But it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. And I'm just glad I don't have to do it anymore.
You know, that seems to be the way of government. A lot of the decisions are made without a whole lot of knowledge on what they're doing.
It is.
And you know as well as I do, the laws have, the numbers that have passed through have escalated each year, and now we're basically a land of roofs on everything.
Yeah, and the school system seem like is put in charge of curing every ill of society.
Yes.
And it shouldn't be that way. The teachers should teach, and you know, they shouldn't be fundraisers, they shouldn't be medical people that have to check to see if the kid's had his medicine and stuff. It shouldn't be that way, but it is.
I don't know how in the world a principal, or even go to Harry Gill, who's superintendent. How in the world can you do your jobs when you have so many things that you have to take care of during the day and still get into the evaluation process of having to follow your teachers? And, of course, he has to follow around the principals and everybody else. It seems like an almost impossible task.
I think it is. And I do not – I don't see how they do it. I know one thing that hurt me worse than anything is when I had to quit teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I taught – even when I was principal, I taught. When we had a high school, I taught whatever was left. And then I taught 8th grade math at Las Casas forever because I enjoyed it. And the kids seemed to pay a little bit more attention to me than they would some of the other ones. And I could do things because the principal wasn't going to get on to me. Like, you know, I'd teach a unit in income tax every mm-hmm. year. And it just got to where I didn't have time to do it. And I hated that worse than anything that ever happened to me, that I had to quit teaching because I really enjoyed teaching 8th grade math.
I really wish you were still at the school. And I'm not saying anything against anybody that's there presently, because when people talk about you and when I went to school, Gilbert Sharon, and then all the other teachers, you know, I can remember every one I ever had, they stand so high, in my opinion, that those people can never be replaced. Of course, they were working under a different system.
Yeah.
Than what we're looking at now. And we've got a caller on the line, Larry. Caller, welcome aboard with Larry Stewart.
Oh, yeah, this is Don Witherspoon. How are you?
I'm doing
hey, Don.
Good, Don. How you doing?
Hey.
The biggest MTSU supporter alive.
He is.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
two things. First of all, I wondered, I had to tune in late. Have you talked yet about your Kentucky basketball career?
No, that may not come up because Truman's a football
man. Well, I think a lot of people might enjoy hearing that. And secondly, yesterday somebody was on the Truman Show and they said something about naming a bridge after you.
Yep.
Is it what's that about? And I just want to know, did you use Bobby's household account to pay for that sign?
No, I didn't. I would have had to if I'd have had to pay for it, Don. But when I retired, they built a new bridge across Stones River going into Las Casas, and the good people in Las Casas started a petition to name that bridge the Larry Stewart Bridge, and they got enough, and John Hood and Jim Tracy and some of them, they named that bridge after me, and it's quite an honor. But they asked me how was I going to pay for the sign, how did I expect them to pay for the sign. I said, well, the same way you pay for Joe Jackson's and Joe Cates and everybody else's. I don't know. But,
I know how tight you are with Bobby's household account. That's why I was concerned about that.
Don, she won't let me have it.
You all have a good day.
She won't let me have it.
You tell Hannah, hey.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing about it, a lot of people don't realize that once the people in Las Casas organized, and they were going to have the sign put up, and then they found out how much the sign was going to cost the size that you wanted.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden, all of those major backers, they started coming up with pennies and dimes, and they weren't coming up with much more. And that's a much smaller sign than I thought it was going to be.
Well, it's a much smaller sign than it should be.
Yes,
now,
it is.
Now, a lot of people say you have to be dead to have a bridge named after you, and my wife says she can take care of that real quick. And so I kind of try to, you know, walk pretty soft around the house. But that was a great honor.
It was a great honor. And, you know, there's not many people that are able to reach that plateau that you've reached.
Well, I was blessed.
Yes, you were. And we want to let you know that part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. And they come into your house and do all the chores for you and that you no longer can do. And even they may run errands and all those other things. And it's 24/7, so you no longer have to worry about that. And you can just go on with your life and just enjoy everything staying right at home. And if you're interested in that, call 713-4639 or check out their website at www.athomecaretennessee.com. And they're at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, and right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard.
Did you get storm damage from the hail storm? If you're not familiar with the process, making an insurance claim due to the recent hail storm might seem confusing. Matthew H. from North Murfreesboro said, quote, Millennium Roofing has a certified insurance adjuster on staff. They insisted on being present when our adjuster examined our home. Now that's what I call service, end quote. Millennium Roofing is a local family-owned company and has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Millennium Roofing and Construction, 525-6752 or millenniumroofingtn.com.
Play it again, sports!
25 to 50% off. A new shipment of scratch and dent fitness equipment is in at Play It Again Sports on North Thompson Lane. Exercise bikes, ellipticals, treadmills, and more. 25 to 50% off. Save now before the deals are gone.
Get a magical deal on fixing your hail-damaged vehicle.
Dent Magic will give you a $100 Visa gift card for Christmas shopping for every repair. Don't wait months to get your car fixed. Dent Magic can get you in this week. Dent Magic will repair your vehicle in 2 days, and they will never drill a hole in your vehicle to access a dent.
They've got an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and will even pay your deductible. Some restrictions apply. Dent Magic, 1 mile west of Coles on Old Fort Parkway in the old fire station. Dent Magic, the industry leader in paintless dent repair.
Visit them on the web
at hailmagic.com.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, and AmeriCare Pest Control.
I've got pesties, buzzing rodents running all through my house, ants chewing wood, and look, there's a mouse. I've overrun with pests, but you're gonna be sure, safe and secure, it's the last rites for those pests. Call the best of the best to get rid of your pests.
893-7111. AmeriCare Services Incorporated. Call us today. 893-7111.
It's Friday, December the 16th, and the Angels' Closet Sale today and tomorrow over at Heaven Sent Children. Gently used children's clothes, toys, and accessories. and it benefits this international adoption service. Heaven Sent Children is at 307 North Maple Street. That's today and tomorrow. The big lock-in tonight at SportsCom. This is for youngsters ages 8 to 14. Starts at 7 tonight and continues all night until 7 in the morning. That's over at SportsCom. And the Murfreesboro Bicentennial Reception to honor retired teachers. Tomorrow from noon until 2 at the Bradley Academy Museum and Cultural Center. And also tomorrow, Second Chance Ministries welcomes area children to its annual community event. That's noon until 2 tomorrow at Holloway High School. There will be gifts for the children tomorrow, free food, and lots of gospel singing. Reverend Carl Marable, our hats off to you. Thank you for this event. That's noon until 2 tomorrow at Holloway High School. And the final day for the Christmas Farmers Market is this Sunday, 2 until 5, over at the Lane Agri Park. Those are Good Neighbor events.
Weather Eye.
Mainly cloudy this afternoon with some light rain. Merge a high in the mid-40s. Tonight, gradual clearing. Low near 29, sunny Saturday, high of 47. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now it's 37.
Did you realize we have 10 items at the Maple Street Grill for lunch under $6.99? Hi, this is Mike from Maple Street Grill. Debbie and I wanted to invite you down to try some of the exciting new menu items. 10 items at the Maple Street Grill for lunch under $6.99. Maple Street Grill. 109 North Maple Street in the historic downtown Murfreesboro area.
He knows Rutherford County, and he knows the people of Rutherford County. Truman Jones, here on WGNS AM and FM.
With today's guest, the Honorable Larry Stewart.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I knew that'd choke you up.
This portion of the show, is brought to you by Blue Restaurant and Bar, located in the Jackson Heights Plaza. They have something for everyone on their menu, from steaks, fresh seafood, pastas, salads, appetizers, and special items that are unique to Blue. They have 6 items for lunch at just $6. And enjoy their Sunday live brunch beginning at 10 a.m. with music from Larry Pinkerton and Avant Lane. Whether it's enjoying the courtyard at dinner, the game on the big screen TVs, or piano music Friday and Saturday evenings, there's something for everyone at Blue. Blue Restaurant and Bar, located in the Jackson Heights Plaza, and be sure to visit their website at blue-restaurant.com. That's Blue Restaurant and Bar owners Marty Brown and Greg Pogue. You know, we were talking before we came on the air, Larry, and I asked you if you remembered Burl Crowell. And I ran into his sister a few days ago, and she had been listening to my show. She lives over in just outside Rutherford County, over in the Bedford County area. But she still listens to the show, and one of her favorite shows was when we were talking about the Moonshiners, and her dad was a revenuer. And I ran into her at Publix the other day, and she started talking to me, and she told me that she was Burl Crowell's sister. She said, do you remember him? I said, of course, everybody knew Burl Crowell.
Everybody remembers Burl.
Yeah.
He was a great guy. We're talking about Burl Crowell, mm-hmm. the basketball and football official.
Right.
He was also a great educator, mm-hmm. and a lot of people don't know, but Burl Crowell he loved refereeing like the rest of us loved playing. And if there was a game that needed to be refereed, he'd be there. He'd call the College Grove Elementary Tournament every year. And you might see him on Saturday morning calling the elementary game, and then turn the TV on at night and see him calling University of Kentucky and Indiana game. I mean, we had a lot of good guys like that. Gabby Street was another one. The Baird brothers, they refereed ball games around here. W.K. Foster from Fayetteville. But they were good guys, and every coach you talk to has a Burl Crowell story. Kermit Davis Sr., when he coached at Mississippi State, you know, he had Burl Crowell stories. I mean, he was just a great guy. Everybody liked him.
Well, you've got another caller on the line, Larry. Caller, welcome aboard with Larry Stewart.
Hey, Larry.
Hey.
What are you doing on the radio again?
Is this Ramsey?
No, it's Melinda.
Melinda Black. Well, I'm here trying to take
up. Get off the radio.
I'm here trying to take up for you and all the other people that listen to this show. What are you doing?
I just got through wrapping some Christmas presents, mail.
Got mine wrapped.
Yeah.
Truman, this is another great...
But you didn't get one.
This is another great MTSU fan right here, Melinda Samuels. Her husband, Greg, and I played together at MTSU. They retired in Chattanooga, and the first thing they wanted to do was come back and get involved with MTSU athletics, and they are. They're great people.
The people like that, they make this neighborhood, they really do, special.
They really do. And we're glad to have them, and I'm glad to call them friends. We go out and eat every once in a while. About time, Melinda.
Well, you know something, Larry?
What?
Some people probably thought that their real estate went down when we moved here to
Murfreesboro. No.
But we absolutely love it here and can't do enough for BRAA and athletic department. And just know that, Larry, that you and Bobby are very special to us. And we wish you a Merry Christmas. And let's do Mexican this week.
Let's do.
All right.
Thanks
Love
for calling.
You.
Love you, Melinda.
Bye.
Great folks right
now. Now, were they originally from the Kentucky area?
No. Greg Samuels was a freshman when I was a senior, and Greg came from Terre Haute, Indiana.
Oh.
Greg Samuels was the most valuable player in the Indiana State basketball tournament in 1962 or 3.
How did he escape Indiana?
Well, I don't know. Maybe Bobby Knight was asleep or something.
That's amazing.
But he and then Melinda was from Nashville, and then they married, and then Greg worked for Blue Cross and Blue Shield in Chattanooga. But they couldn't wait to retire and move back to Murfreesboro, and we go to everything.
That shows you about MTSU, because both of you came from the hotbeds of basketball. You had Indiana and Kentucky. And that was it as far as basketball was back then. Now, what was the difference in playing in high school in Kentucky and playing in high school in Tennessee? Well, there had to have been a major difference.
Well, I think the main difference was we didn't play girls basketball in Kentucky. Now, I'm not saying that that's bad. I'm saying that we, the guys, got to play more. We had B teams and freshman teams where the other schools – you know, and we would play before the varsity games, you know, when you was on the B team.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. And everybody in Kentucky had a basketball goal in their yard. And even up in the mountains, if there's a level place up around Pikeville, Kentucky, there's a basketball goal on it. Now the cemeteries are on the side of a hill, but the basketball goal will be sitting on a level place. And it's just, I mean, it's been that way. Everybody listened to Rupp's teams when they played. My daddy thought Larry Connolly was the best player in every league.
He was good.
And yes, he was. And when they got beat by Texas Western in 65 or 6 or whatever, my daddy didn't say a word for 2 weeks because Rupp didn't win a national championship like he was supposed to. But I don't know.
You guys got where you expected it. I mean, in the 50s, they had some of the most unbelievable teams. I think they had one team where something like 4 out of the 5 starters played in the NBA. But Rupp was – how many players did he normally get out of the state of Kentucky?
Well, he could get them anywhere he wanted to. And for a while, Rupp had a problem with recruiting the Mountain – the kids from the mountains in Kentucky, because they'd get homesick and go home. And so he had – now, Johnny Cox changed all that. And I know a lot about Kentucky basketball because the doctor in my hometown was a team physician for the University of Kentucky, Dr. Jackson. And in the 50s, when there was no interstates, he would jump in his Cadillac after he'd close his practice down, and he'd drive to Lexington for the ball game, then he'd drive back and open up his office the next morning. And that was the reason I was going to go to the University of Kentucky, because of Dr. Jackson. But Rupp just, he had that charm about him, and everybody wanted to play for him because they were good.
Well, we got another caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Larry Stewart.
Well, good afternoon to two icons from Rutherford County.
Mr. Campbell, how are you, sir?
I'm fine.
His Highness.
You're like Burl Crowell and Ray Hughes. You cannot disguise your voice.
That's true.
Well, you were talking about Burl Crowell a minute ago, and I did have the honor of working some with Burl when he was
officiating
basketball, certainly not on the college level. But I did visit in his home after he got sick. and he had a room that he was in, gentlemen, that was about the size of maybe a double car garage. And it was like walking into a shrine.
I imagine.
Nothing but plaques and monuments and gratitude things
all
over that place. And it just pictures, and you name it who you had pictures with, and you're exactly right. So,
everybody.
I know you know the story about the deal. I believe it was Technical Pal, not on on no more from LSU at one time.
Dale Brown.
Was down there and I don't remember now the coach's name. It slips my mind at my age.
Dale Brown, I'd say.
Dale, I believe you're right. And Dale got to acting up. And Burrow went to him and said, "My coach said right
That's
here in
always.
My hand, I've got a technical foul for you, and I'm going to put it in my pocket.
Yeah.
And if I ever need it again, then I'll have it already." And sure enough, he got to and had LSU at Kentucky. And I think he used that at that point in time.
I suspect he probably had to with Mr. Brown.
Well, you know, probably true.
There have been people that Burrow would say, if ever how many steps it takes you to get back to the bench, that's how many technical fouls you're going to get, so he'd have his managers to come out and pick him up and carry him back to the bench. You know, that's the way it was back in the good old days, Butch.
You might want to run by, if you have time. Of course, I did not see your name or your picture in the paper as candidate for the new director of school after Mr. Gill leaves, but I know you've got a plan. Sometime you might want to run that by Trimmer and see if he agrees with
you. Well, you know.
Well, you know he could do that right now, Butcher, if he would like to.
Well, I'm going to hang up and y'all can do what you want to with it.
Well, we've decided that Butch Campbell and me and Mike Swanson and Ronnie Eakes are going to take this superintendent's job on a timeshare.
Is this going to be a coup? How are you going to do that?
The only problem, we're going to have to put Swanson off by himself. We cannot let him be around people because he don't do good around people.
We're
thinking about presenting that to the school board and just see if they might want to run with that.
Do you think you need Harry's endorsement with that? Do you think that he should maybe leave you a list of some of the things that he feels like needs to be done and let that be part of his legacy?
Well, yeah, he write it down, but we'll do like Harry. He's got people down there that know how to get it done, and we'll just have them to do it. See, we know how to delegate.
Yeah, well, you've always been able to do that.
Yeah, but there are some good people in Rutherford, and I'm joking when I'm talking about me and Butch, but
I thought you were telling the truth.
No, there's a lot of good people that could be good superintendents of schools in Rutherford County. Some of us have already finished our careers and retired. Liz Bennett's one of them I'm thinking about. Don Odom is probably the most knowledgeable person about education in the state of Tennessee. Don, he would be great superintendent of school. I don't know whether he would want it or not because of his age, but you don't get old till you get about 80 nowadays, but Don would certainly be a good one. Joe Phillips would be a good one. So I think the board has got a lot of good people to pick from, and I think they'll make a wise decision.
You know something, while you were talking there, it just hit me. Now, I think I read somewhere that the board was going to hire a group or whatever, kind of like a searching committee, and then bring it before them. You know, we have some of the most educated, knowledgeable people about education in Rutherford County that has ever existed in the history of this community. You're there together. What about you guys being the search committee for the board? It would be non-political. It would be just for the sake of the schools and the kids. Now, wouldn't that be an awesome thing?
Well, I don't know whether that'd work or not. I mean, I think that, you know, somebody like Butch Campbell and Mike Swanson, and we might, you know, have some input. But
input.
What they've done, they've invited people to come in, and they're not going to charge us anything,
which
I think is good. But, you know, there
and you know more about the educational community than anybody else.
There are people out there that are professional candidates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time a job comes up, they apply, and then they'll want to get it for a year or two, and then and then get bought out and then go somewhere else. Well, we don't need somebody like that. We need another Harry Gill is what we need, or another Hewlin Watson.
Right.
That's what we need, and I think we've got them. I don't know who they are, but I'm sure that the school board, you know, they know who they are. Donald Jernigan is one of the best school men that's ever been in this county, and he's on the board. And so, you know, I think they'll do a good job and pick the right person.
What you and I are talking about are hired guns, and I have never seen that work where they'll bring somebody from out of state to be either over education, law enforcement, or whatever. And I've never seen it work the way it should, because they come in here, they don't even know the players when they come in.
Well, you go ask the people in Cannon County. They had a chance to get it right and didn't. The city school board got it right, you know, when they hired Linda Gilbert. She's local.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, that was a no-brainer to me. And the county school board got it right when they hired Harry Gill and Hewlin Watson. So, I mean, I think it's a no-brainer to me.
Well, we've got a caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Larry Stewart.
Larry, how is Ray Stewart? Ray Hughes doing now?
Ray Hughes is doing pretty good. I saw him back in the summer and sat and talked to him a long time. Ray's doing pretty good. How you doing, Joe?
Norris Lover used to ride him all the time.
I know it. We're talking to Joe Finney,
Bigfoot.
Bigfoot Joe, and Joe. He's doing good, doing pretty good. Joe, I talked to Franny, got a Christmas card from him the other day, and Ray's doing pretty good.
Well, tell him I said hello, will
you? I'll do that, Joe. Good to talk to you, buddy.
Okay, we have another caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard, Larry Stewart.
Larry.
Yes.
It's Bud Riggs.
How you doing, Bud? We go back a long way.
Okay, he's going to be on the committee. He's going to be
We just put you on this search committee, Bud.
Yes. Well, I'm just going to say that's what's wrong with education now. They don't use any common sense.
I agree 100%, Bud.
Was it state level? All the years that you were in education, I doubt that they ever asked you for any advice or at all at state level to consider anything going on.
No. I never did.
And same thing with me. Not that I knew a lot, but still, that sometimes people that's in there shouldn't be the one being asked.
I agree. Well, you knew what was good for Smyrna High School, didn't you, Bud?
Mm-hmm, you did.
Well, I tried to. I love to like you. I like the kids and work with them and talk with them. Knew most of them until we got so big that I couldn't remember them all.
Yep. Your predecessor told me one time when the school gets so big that the principal don't know every kid by name, it's too big, and I agree 100%.
Well, he's the guy that I sort of set my standards by, Mr. Michael Williams, and people of that nature, and I know that you did a great job last Cassis. Actually, you know, I'm from Milton.
Oh, yeah.
I was born there, you know.
That's why you did such a good job in education.
I was just thinking when you guys were talking about evaluations, I think you'd agree it doesn't take 4 to 6 times to evaluate somebody to know what kind of job they're doing or if they're a good teacher or not.
Most of the time you can walk down the hall looking at that little peephole, as Fuzz Neville used to call it, and tell who's doing a good job, can't you, Bud?
Yeah, that's what Mr. Mike Williams said. He said, I don't have to go into classroom.
Oh, hire good teachers and leave them alone.
Right, I agree. But you've done a great job, and I appreciate your association all these years. And I know a lot of people respect you in this county, and congratulations on your retirement. I didn't realize you've been retired about 11 years.
I have, Bud. Best job I ever had. But I still miss the kids, and I appreciate your friendship over those years, because we fought some battles, didn't we?
Go ahead.
Did you hear us talking about Burl Crowell?
Yeah. Old Burl told me one time, you don't like this. I used to smile a little bit like Bob Burton.
Yeah.
When we were coaching, and I'd smile a little bit at Burl, and old Burl looked over at me and said, Bud, I don't want to see no air between that seat, you know what, if he used the word. I knew he meant what he said, too.
Right.
When he said it, he put up with it, and when he got enough, that was it.
That's right. He told Clifton Tucker one night, Tucker was up mouthing to him, and he said, Mr. Tucker, if you'll sit down and shut up, I can hear what Miss Tucker says, and I can learn something about this game. Mr. Tucker never said another word the rest of the game.
I just want to call you. Enjoy the program.
Enjoy the program.
It does a good job.
Good talking to you, Bud.
Thank you, Bud.
And, you know, I really enjoy listening to you two guys who were at the very top of your profession and how much respect you have for each other. Oh, that means a lot.
Bud Rakes is one of the best guys that you'll ever want to be associated with. And like he said, Mr. J.J. McWilliams set the standards for all of us.
I never knew him, but I've heard so many good things about him. He ran a tight ship.
He was the Lee Pate of high school principals is what it amounts to.
Want to let you know that the last part of this show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive at 2006 North Main Street in Shebaville, Tennessee. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, give them a call at 1-800-264-6800 or on the internet, pirtlehowerton.com. Or better yet, take about a 25-minute drive down 231 South just before you get into downtown Shebaville. You'll see them on the left. Go in. It's a nice day to just go in, have a cup of coffee with them, or maybe some hot chocolate. Enjoy your conversation, and I'll guarantee you, you'll be glad you did.
Get a magical deal on fixing your hail-damaged vehicle.
Dent Magic will give you a $100 Visa gift card for Christmas shopping for every repair. Don't wait months to get your car fixed. Dent Magic can get you in this week. Dent Magic will repair your vehicle in 2 days, and they will never drill a hole in your vehicle to access a dent.
They've got an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and will even pay your deductible. Some restrictions apply. Dent Magic, 1 mile west of Coles on Old Fort Parkway in the old fire station. Dent Magic, the industry leader in paintless dent repair. Visit them on the web at hailmagic.com.
Hello, this is Truman Jones. We have a new sponsor and one that you're going to be delighted with. It's National Healthcare, National Healthcare Corporation right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And this is where life is celebrated. Discover a different kind of care, one that ensures that you're surrounded by people who make a difference in your life. In 11 states, patients and residents feel right at home at National Healthcare Corporation's more than 130 affiliated healthcare centers and home care offices. Their family of facilities delivers exceptional rehabilitative skilled nursing and extended care in locations that are close to home and family. In line with their longtime commitment to provide a continuum of care to those who need their services at any age. And want to let you know that this is a local business started here, even though it's pretty much all through the Southeast. National Healthcare, Murfreesboro, where life is celebrated.
He knows Rutherford County's past, and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's the Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
Welcome back with us. We're just discussing a little politics off the air. One of the things I've always wanted to ask you, you grew up in a Kentucky community where basketball was king. And I know you probably had a hoop that was set up on the barn or something and all that. Have you ever seen, I know you have, you've seen the movie Hoosiers.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
The scenes in there remind me of Kentucky, and of course Indiana too. Yeah. How was it growing up in that kind of laid-back atmosphere where everybody knew everybody, and that was just your main love, was shooting hoops?
Yeah.
And then how did you get swayed to come to Middle Tennessee State?
Well, I don't know whether I got time for all this, not true, but
it was great
growing up like that. Yeah. It was great. I had a brother 19 months older than me, and we played all the time when we wasn't working. Mm-hmm. Now, we had to sucker tobacco, and we had to haul the hay, and we had to gather corn and stuff. But then we played, mm-hmm. and my daddy was very supportive. You know, if we had a ball game and stuff, now he couldn't go to all of them, but it was great. Now, of course, I went to a junior college out of high school.
Right.
Because the high school I went to, we took agriculture. And, you know, I wasn't the best student in the world. And the deal was, you go to junior college and learn to play guard, and then you can go could play for Coach Rupp at Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. The best move I ever made, when I came to Middle Tennessee, I had played in like 75 ball games. We went undefeated 2 years down in Mississippi, little school called Etowamba Junior College in Fulton, Mississippi. Didn't have 300 people in the whole town. But we had a great team, and when I came up here, I was ready. Now, I was going to Kentucky, and I went up and talked to Coach Rupp, and we had my scholarship papers and everything. He said, anything else you want? And I said, my wife will need a job. He said, "Are you married?" I said, "No, sir, but I'm going to get married in June. He said, "Well, you can't be married and play for me. You know, you make up your mind right now." I said, "Well, coach, I'm getting married." Well, he tore my papers up and he walked out. And then Dr. Jackson, who had carried me up there, he said, "Now, Larry, are you sure about this?" I said, "Yeah." And that was another best decision I ever made. Number one, getting married. Number two, coming to Middle Tennessee State. And I feel like I could have played at Kentucky. That would have been when they had Cotton Nash. They were down a little bit. But I have not regretted 1 minute going to Itawamba Junior College or coming to Middle Tennessee State. And then I don't have to tell you that once I got here, I realized what a great place it was to live. And that's where I decided to live and raise my family and my grandkids and everybody else is right here in Murfreesboro. But
I'm kind of torn because I'm surprised that Adolph Rupp would not accept somebody, because usually when you get married and you're in school, you become more responsible.
Well, I don't know why, but I think Coach Rupp wanted everybody living right there in Wildcat Lodge and everything, and then I couldn't live there and be married. And I don't know whether that's it or not, but that was the deal.
Now, who was the coach here when you came here?
Dr. Bill Stokes. Ed Diddle was the coach, and then Coach Stokes was the assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Diddle left, and back then the assistant always moved up, seemed like. Mm-hmm. And so Coach Stokes was coach for 3 years. He was my coach for 2 years, and then one more year, and then he left and went to Miami-Dade Junior College as a dean. I talked to him just the other day, a great guy. He wasn't blessed with the best of players, but I played with some great guys. I played with some good rebounders. That's what I liked. I'd shoot it and miss it, and they'd throw it back to me, and I'd shoot it again. But
it was easier to throw the ball toward the basket than throw it toward someone else, wasn't it?
I don't know. I never did throw it toward somebody
else.
That's what I'm accused. We had a game back before the great Monty Hale died. We had a game of old players came back, and Jay Cole and I were on the same team, and Monty Hale said, "That'll never work, because somebody will have to take the ball out of bounds." And I passed to Jay one time, and he scored, and Monty Hale said, "You just witnessed the first assist in Larry Stewart's career." But Monty was a great guy. He came to Murfreesboro the same year I did.
Well, tell me about the athlete that you brought in here today.
My son, my grandson, Tyler Randolph. He's a freshman at Siegel High School, and he aspires to play basketball and baseball, and we're giving him all the support. And he's a hard worker. He's a hard worker.
Does he kind of remind you of you when you were that age and playing ball?
No, because he don't like to shoot it like I did.
He doesn't?
No, we're going to have to work on that. Now in baseball, he's a pretty good baseball player.
Looks like a good athlete.
He's a catcher. He's a catcher, which my brother always took that chore. I never did like that. But he's a good kid. That's what I like. And he makes his grades, and I'm proud of him. I'm proud of my granddaughters in Texas, and I'm proud of my grandson right here.
Coming from you and coming from your bloodlines, they got to be great kids.
I would love to have had him in school.
Thanks for being on again, Larry.
Thank you for having me, Truman.
And let you know that next week, we have another great week. Of course, with Larry topping this one off this week. Next week, we have Shirley Ferris-Jones. Harris Hooper, who you know quite
great
well.
Guy, another guy.
Butch Campbell, who we heard from earlier, is going to be on. Madge Lewis, who wrote the article for the Murfreesboro Magazine, will be on Thursday. And then Charlene Norris will be on Friday. So it's going to be another great week. Hope you have a good weekend.
You've got some great educators coming in next week.
We do.